Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I'm your host, Kat Jepsen, and today I am joined by Susan Thixton. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. In your part of the world, it's probably good evening.
Yeah, it's 3 p.m. here at the moment. What time is it over there? 10 a.m.?
10 a.m., yeah.
Susan is a dedicated pet food safety advocate fighting for change in pet food regulation and quality in the USA. Now, Susan started the website Truth About Pet Food in 2004, which offers free resources to pet parents globally on pet food safety and regulations. It has topics covering ingredients, testing, recalls, laws, and more. The website also provides support on what you can do if you think your pet's food made them sick. In 2013, Susan founded the Association for Truth in Pet Food to give a voice to consumers and advocate for safe pet food, proper regulation of pet food, and transparency in pet food labeling. Susan also published Bio Beware, The Crimes, Lies, and Truth About Pet Food in 2011, which sheds light on some of the shocking facts behind the all too familiar food we feed our pets and provides insight into why we should be taking a closer look beyond the bowl. So, Susan, you set up the Truth About Pet Food website in 2004, and that was following, unfortunately, a painful experience that you endured as a result of feeding your beloved dog, Sam, pet food. Can you share with us what happened and how you became aware that it was the pet food that was the issue?
This dog and she died in 1991, okay, is when this happened. The dog died. And at that time I ran a dog obedience school and dog boarding facility. And so this dog was my teaching partner. She was, you know, my business partner, my best friend. She helped my children learn how to walk. You know, they would hold on to her fur and she'd help stabilize them as they were learning to walk. And almost overnight, she got a tumor on her pelvic bone. And my veterinarian at the time knew more about pet food than most veterinarians do today, told me it was cancer. I had about 2 weeks to tell her goodbye. Wow. And that the cancer was likely caused by a chemical preservative used in her pet food.
Wow.
And I was just heartbroken because that meant what I did caused her cancer. So I called the pet food company. This was before the internet. And I wanted to know, you know, what their shelf life was. That was the only thing at the time I was brave enough to ask them is how long does this food stay fresh?
Yeah.
Because my vet said that this chemical, and the chemical is ethoxyquin, ethoxyquin, I believe. It's still used in pet food today. That I wanted to see, it was used to extend shelf life, make it stay fresh longer.
Yeah.
So I called the company and they very proudly told me their pet food would stay fresh for 25 years.
25 years.
Yeah. Wow. It was just horrifying to me. And those words, along with me having to put my dog down at 8 years old, it just changed my life. And that veterinarian shared some books he had with me to continue my education. When the internet came out, then we had access to scientific papers and so forth, but where I sort of went to was regulations. Is what are the laws? What is allowed? What is not allowed? And that really resonated with me, the law aspect of it. And I started going to regulatory meetings. They're held in the U.S. twice a year. And I started going to those, trying to be a voice for pet owners, pet food consumers, which I still go to this day. They're no fun. You walk in, it's very expensive. It costs like $550 just to walk in the door.
Wow.
Not including your travel expenses, your hotel, so forth. And they don't like you. They don't want anyone to upset their system. And, you know, I raise my hand and go, "What? Wait a minute, you can't do that because," and so thus I'm not a very popular person there. I've had my life threatened at AFCO meetings, no kidding.
Wow.
They have threatened to kill me. They have threatened to kill my daughter, and they knew her name. Daughter, I work with my adult daughter. And
so who is it that threatens you? Is it AFCO themselves, or
it's don't disclose, you know, I'll get text. I walked into one AFCO meeting, and I mean, as soon as I walked into the hotel, my phone dings, and it was a text from them saying, "Glad you made it to AFCO. You better stop." So it's not an easy thing to go against these industries that are utilizing very lax laws or utilizing the total lack of enforcement of law.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine it's tough. And as with anything, when there's so much money involved, there's always going to be, you know, a bit of pushback, isn't there, when you're trying to go up against them. That's awful. That's awful that you had to experience that. But you still obviously stand strong in the face of that as well. And that's because obviously the welfare of pets means so much to you, which is truly remarkable. So thank you for standing up for all of the pets around the world. So unfortunately happened with Sam, and then you kind of took a deep dive into learning about pet food. Can you give us an example of some of the things that you found out that were happening in pet food that consumers don't know about?
Well, you would think that in the U.S., we have the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, who is the government regulatory body over pet food. You would think that pet food abides by law. I did.
Yeah.
But the FDA directly allows, and I'm quoting from them, "diseased animals and animals that have died other than by slaughter to be processed into pet food with no disclosure to the consumer." So an example of animals that have died other than by slaughter. In 2017, I believe, there was a hurricane that hit the eastern part of the U.S., hit in North and South Carolina area. And in that part of the U.S., there are confinement farms raising poultry, raising hogs in barns. Mm-hmm. Well, due to the hurricanes, they experience massive flooding, and animals drowned in their barns. There were like 5 million, I believe, poultry, chickens and turkeys, and 100,000 to 300,000 hogs that drowned. So when the floodwaters went down, bulldozers came in, bulldozed those decomposing carcasses, bloated, horrible decomposing carcasses, bulldozed them out. Those carcasses were sent to rendering facilities. They were ground, cooked, and sold as pet food with no disclosure to consumers. So when pet owners are buying pet food, they don't know if that pet food, they are not told if that pet food contains diseased animals or animals that have died other than by slaughter. And wow, the statistics are like, and this is just condemned carcasses. So another government agency, which is the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, they are the government agency over slaughtering of animals, meat processing in the U.S. And they provide statistics for how many animals are condemned. The whole carcass is condemned because of a disease or illness. And yeah, it's in the millions of pounds every year of just condemned animal carcasses. This does not include the fatalities in these confinement barns or any type of natural disaster like a hurricane.
Yeah.
All of that material is disposed of into pet food, and again, with no disclosure to the consumer. So we constantly fight this. When you want the FDA to change the way they're doing things, it is an official process called a citizen petition that you submit to the agency. And they are supposed to respond within 120 days. I've got one waiting for FDA to respond that is almost 2.5 years old now that they have not responded to.
Wow.
And it is regarding disclosure of this material. It is illegal for this, per U.S. law, for this material to go into pet food. But it is also illegal for it not to be disclosed. And that's what I'm asking for is, okay, if you're going to use it, at least disclose it to the consumer. Give the consumer the opportunity to know what they're buying.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'd never know, would you? Because when it goes to the rendering facility, it all just gets kind of like chucked in and all crushed up and cooked up. So you would never know any different, would you?
That's right.
So it's just, and part of the problem is that most pet foods are feed grade, whereas when we tend to think of them, we think of kind of like food grade, human grade. We just kind of, because of all the nice pretty pictures on the packets of the chicken breasts and the chunks of steak and the broccoli and the carrots, we just kind of envisage that that's gone into that bag and been turned into biscuits. So because I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions, isn't it? So can you just explain for us what the difference is between feed and food and what other kinds of controversial ingredients can be found in pet foods because they are categorized as feed?
Feed grade is officially defined in the U.S. and it is, not having the exact quote here of the definition, but the definition states that it abides by law unless it doesn't. The legal definition of feed grade allows these quality of ingredients to violate laws. So feed grade could be a human edible, a quality that we're familiar with, or it could be condemned animal material. We don't know. And there's no disclosure. And that is part of that citizen petition that I filed with FDA, is requesting that everything be labeled as either feed grade or food grade. Food is just like us. In the US, there you think chicken and you see chicken on a label, and they even have images of a roasted chicken or grilled chicken breast on the label. But pet food chicken has a completely different legal definition than human food chicken. Human food chicken in the US has to be inspected by regulatory authority and passed as edible. Pet food chicken holds no such requirement. It can be condemned chicken, it can be edible chicken, but it can also be inedible chicken. And that's what most pet owners don't understand, is that these words on a pet food label, the ingredient names that we're familiar with because of our own food, are very different in pet food. The meaning of in pet food, the legal definition of them in pet food is very different than the legal definition in human food.
Wow, yeah, it's awful, isn't it? It's awful. And I think we I don't understand why, but I think we do tend to kind of we struggle to believe things like this are true because they just sound so awful, and you just can't believe that humans would actually kind of feed this to our pets without anybody knowing. And you would think, of course, it's kind of like it's obviously going to be so much cheaper to use condemned animals, for example, than it is to use pasture-raised chicken, a hell of a lot cheaper. So you would expect that it would only happen in kind of like the really super cheap brands of kibble. Is that what kind of information you found out, or are they being used in kind of like the more premium brands as well?
Not necessarily. It can, we have found, as an example, Origin Pet Food, Champion Pet Food is a brand. They're now owned by Mars Petcare, but years back, I believe before Mars purchased the company, there we had a recall of pet foods for pentobarbital. Pentobarbital is the drug used to euthanize animals, cats, dogs, horses. So that confirmed that some type of a euthanized animal was what that pet food was made from. When regulatory authorities went in and did they do a trace forward and trace backwards to determine the source of the contamination, and then a trace forward to see who else maybe got those ingredients. So I have the documents that evidence this. They discovered that the ingredient was in a fat, a rendered ingredient, the fat ingredient in the pet food. That's where the pentobarbital was in. And that fat was also sold to Champion Pet Food, who has the reputation of being a higher quality food than the other foods that were recalled. Their purchase price is significantly higher.
Yeah, that's shocking, isn't it? Because I think there is this kind of this way of thinking that if something's more expensive, then it has to be of higher quality. That's the kind of way that
That,
we think.
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily true.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean monetary value can be, it's decided by anybody in the company, isn't it? So just, I mean, you'd like to think that there's somebody sat there thinking, how can I give this product to pet parents for the cheapest possible price while still making money on it myself? But most of the time, it's more about how much money can we actually make out of this product as well, which is another one of the the problems that we face. So can you give us some more examples? Because I mean, obviously the euthanasia drug is just, you would hate to be thinking that your pet food had that inside in it and you're feeding it to your pet every day. I mean there must have been some injuries from the pets eating that food. What kind of things happened from that? Oh wow, yeah, that's awful. That's absolutely awful.
The quality of ingredients, the feed grade quality, pertains to every ingredient. And it also applies to manufacturing standards. So as an example, in human food production, so food production, bugs, if roaches were in a facility, it would be shut down because everything has to be clean.
Yeah.
And food, and I have these documents as well too, there was a Mars pet care facility in Ohio in manufacturing, in feed grade manufacturing. This Mars pet care facility, in the inspection report, the FDA stated they witnessed, quote, millions of roaches.
Millions.
In the food production, millions of roaches in the food production area.
Wow.
This company did not get a warning. They did not have to recall. It was accepted because it's feed. It is held to a completely different standard, even in production, the manufacturing process, than food.
That's awful. That's awful.
However, the confusing issue for consumers is that they are all labeled food when they're not. They meet no standards of food.
And
some of them do. Thankfully, some of them do. Some pet foods made in human food facilities. Every ingredient is human edible. It's designed and formulated for pets, but it meets every single standard that our own food.
Yeah, I think now, obviously, over the past, well, it's been 20 years since you started the website as well. So a lot has kind of been uncovered by that point, hasn't there? And then more and more people are becoming aware of how unhealthy pets are these days, because chronic disease obviously is on the rise. And that's, you know, there are some companies out there who are really trying to do their bit and kind of raise the bar on the quality of the food that we feed our dogs. And that kind of, you do have a list, don't you? But it's only for the USA, isn't it? Where you kind of like outline the top foods that you would actually feed your dogs based on, like the quality of their ingredients and the practices and stuff. How long have you been doing the list now? The list of pet foods?
I think 2012 was the first list that I did. Few years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
13 years.
And I imagine a lot of pet parents in the US use this as a resource to kind of guide them on which kind of foods to feed their pet, especially if they've stumbled across your work and your research and things like that.
Well, I validate everything. So if a company tells me, you know, they put on their website these beautiful images of steak or chicken, require them to provide me evidence that they are sourcing human edible meats. So everything, every claim they make has to be validated.
Yeah.
And it's hundreds of documents from each company, because I have to see like invoices or what they're buying for every ingredient, as well if they make claims that they source meats that are certified humanely raised or organic or non-GMO, they have to provide that evidence as well too. And I literally read every single document. It takes 3 months for me to put that together each year to go through all these documents. But
wow.
The pet owners who purchase it, then that's how I support myself doing this work, is through that document. And the pet owners know that everything has been validated, that I'll check everything.
So how do you choose which companies to even begin to research? So do you kind of decide which ones you're going to ask for the information, or do you send out a boatload of requests to loads of different companies and then see who kind of responds with the information that you need?
You run across new companies just doing this work every day, but pet owners as well send me suggestions because they might like a brand. They want the validation of it, you know, going through the process for the list.
Yeah, because pet food companies can pretty much say whatever they want on the label, can't they? And I think something ridiculous like it only has to have 4% of a protein in it for it to be able to be called like a beef food. So if it's got 4% beef in it, you can call it a beef pet food, even though there's such a small amount of actual beef in there. And then you'll find things like contains blueberries to help with, you know, antioxidants, and then like 0.1% of the bag will be blueberries, kind of thing, isn't there? So there's so much misconception. I can see why pet parents would be looking for that validation. All of your work at the minute though is just focused on the USA, isn't it? Because I mean, well, that is a huge area for you to cover anyway, as it is. So have you ever done any research into kind of like Europe and the UK?
I've done a little, and my goal is to do more. Because I've had many pet owners from the EU reach out and say, who does what you do over here? And I don't know of anybody that's digging into the regulations and explaining the regulations to pet owners. So we're going to try. We'll put it that way. I can't promise, but we are going to try to look into the regulations more and see what we can figure out, because it would be nice to have a list for pet owners in the EU. It would be but we're going to try. I have to start digging into the regulations first, and then from there I can figure out what's going on in Europe.
Absolutely. Well, in the UK specifically, we do tend to have higher food standards than in the USA when it comes to food production, both for pets and ourselves. But I don't doubt for one minute that our pet food market, especially ultra processed pet food, isn't saturated with controversial feed grade ingredients. And, you know, all it takes is to find the wrong person with the right loophole. And, you know, that's kind of where things start, isn't it? So I would be keen to see who would make your list in the UK. I really would. That would be so interesting. So interesting. And I can see why people would be interested as well, because, I mean, I haven't seen a copy of the latest list. I don't feed pet food. I make all my own pet food, but I want to know who's on there. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you just kind of want to know that information to see who's doing their bit. Have you ever, still talking about the list, when you reach out to the pet food companies, I suppose, what can you kind of get a feel of how it's going to go just by, you know, your initial kind of contact with the company?
Sometimes, you know, it's, I try never to go in, you know, I have this long list of questions that they initially respond to. You would be surprised at how many companies ignore me. They don't respond to questions, which is unfortunate. But the long list of questions, those answers do weed out a few.
Yeah.
But then the verification finalizes them, you know, and I can tell them as we go through the process, I'll tell them, okay, with verification, you'll be included in the list. But then, you know, I won't get the verification documents that I need. Or in some cases, I've gotten verification that they thought was human edible, and it turns out it was not. It was a feed grade ingredient. So no food ingredient can be feed grade for my list. It has to be food.
Oh, amazing. So you did mention earlier as well that since becoming a pet food safety advocate, you've been attending the AFCO meetings as part of your work, you know, to keep raising awareness and being a voice for the consumers. So you did tell us about, obviously, unfortunate experiences about the threats that you've received. But can you describe what some of the meetings have been like and what typically happens in there in terms of the discussions that are held between the attendees and, you know, and who holds the meeting, like what kind of things are discussed? And, you know, do you kind of get insight into upcoming changes or what's being approved and things like that?
Two different instances. One was a supplement, and this supplement was for livestock feed, not necessarily pet food.
Yeah.
But it was zinc hydroxychloride. So it was a zinc supplement. And the definition proposed allowed for high levels of lead in that supplement. So, like, three veterinarians went, you go to a microphone, if you oppose the approval, them wanting to approve this ingredient, you go to the microphone. Three different veterinarians went to the microphone and said, you can't approve this. You know, the cumulative effect of an animal eating this much lead in their feed every day, they passed it anyway. Another instance, the discussion was expired grocery foods. I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. Honestly, it's fine. It's fine.
So the discussion was expired grocery foods. And this, the example they gave was yogurt cups, like the little six pack of individual servings of yogurt. Well, when those expire, you think they go into the garbage. They do not. There are special dumpsters behind groceries where all of this material then goes to a rendering facility, is ground, plastic and all, and then put in livestock feed.
Wow.
A veterinarian went to the microphone and said, I don't want my daughter drinking milk with elements of plastic in it, because wow, that's what's going to happen. The chemical compounds of plastic would be in that animal, would be in that milk. In the entire room, when she made that statement, the entire room, 400 people, booed her.
Whoa. Booed oh my her. Gosh.
Yes, because they want sheep feed, sheep ingredients. It doesn't matter. A little bit of plastic, it doesn't matter. Whoa. That's their outlook.
That is all. That is horrible. Like, why would you? You know, just to confirm, like in a room in the 400 people, what kind of breakdown is that? Is it mainly kind of like farmers who are going to be buying the feed, or you know, who makes up the room?
It's industry. It's the people who make the feed and sell the feed. Yeah.
Oh, it's the people who make the feed and sell the feed. Okay. So there's no no one other than you and some of the vets who dare speak out, actually kind of there to kind of say this is unhealthy and not a great choice. It's just the people who are gonna benefit from the sale of these foods. Wow, that is horrific.
Yeah.
That is horrific. Yeah. There is and again, even like moving away from the pet food topic, the consumer of the milk, which has been produced by the cow that is eating these feeds, are unaware of this happening. Because I imagine there would be a lot of people who felt the same way as the vet did and didn't want their family drinking the milk with the microplastics in it. Which is absolutely disgusting, isn't it, I think. So you do have some AFCO meetings coming up, I think, don't you, this month?
I do, in a couple of weeks. Get to go have fun again.
Are you a familiar face there now? Do they expect you every year?
I am a familiar face. I'm not a welcome face. They are trying. The new president of AFCO, or he's the director or something, he is trying. But there's old school people there, and these are state regulators that they're just not nice people, and they're not welcome to listening to the needs and wants of consumers. But they listen to industry. Well, we are an equal stakeholder. Consumers should be an equal stakeholder to industry in the outcome of pet food, livestock feed, so forth. So we should have just as loud of a voice as industry does. And some have made little efforts towards that, but most have not, but we keep showing up being the thorn in their side because we deserve to be heard.
Yeah. And they don't, I think when there's so much, because I mean, these companies will make a lot of money off these feeds, won't they? Whenever there's power and there's money, there's always going to be, when you try and push up against them, there's always going to be some pushback from them. Especially. So what advice do you have for pet parents when they're trying to choose food for the pets, sort of kind of if any red flags that they can look out for when they're choosing the food?
I would ask lots of questions. Don't ever hesitate in sending your manufacturer questions. One question, and I don't know exactly how it should be phrased in England or in the EU, but if the ingredients are human edible, okay, if they have passed inspection and would be suitable for use in human food, and you'll get answers pet owners should notice how the company responds. The answer should be a yes or no. Mm-hmm. But it can be, in a lot of cases it is, phrased, oh, all of our ingredients are sourced from like in our case, in the U.S. case, USDA, United States Department of Agriculture facilities. Well, the USDA is also produces condemned material. So my question was, are all your ingredients human edible? And they responded, oh, they all come from human edible facilities. But that still doesn't answer my question, because condemned material comes from these facilities too.
Yeah.
So that's, so pay very close attention to how they are responding to your questions. Make your question very concise. Are your ingredients human edible? And then see how they dance around that question. And if there's a lot of dancing going on, move on to another pet.
Yeah. And if they don't respond at all, then obviously that would be a sign that they're not really bothered about having that conversation, full stop. So, which I imagine companies have been like with you, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you're trusting your pet's life with this food. It's that important. So you do deserve your questions answered. Ask them what kind of testing they do. Do they do any testing on raw ingredients? How often are those tests performed? Do they do any testing on the finished pet foods? What are, what testing is done? How often is that testing done? Questions like that give you a better insight as to what this company is all about.
Yeah, because there's been some recalls. When the recalls have had like excessive levels of vitamin D and things like that, that's it's generally been the case because obviously when food or feed materials are cooked, they're basically baked at seriously high heat a number of times, aren't they, when they're like the kibbles and things, so they tend to overcompensate with the synthetic vitamin and mineral mix that they put into the ingredients to account for what will be lost during that high heat cooking process. But it's quite often that the finished product is not actually tested to find out the exact levels of those vitamins and minerals at the end of it. So, and when you're talking about something like vitamin D, which can cause toxicity and too much of it can cause death in pets, I think there was a recall that had excess vitamin D, wasn't there, or have I just made that up?
we've had quite a few, and one of them was Science Diet, Hill Science Diet, and their own company protocol was to test for excess vitamin D, but they didn't follow their own company protocol. They just shipped the products out and it killed a lot of pets.
Yeah.
So, ask the company if they share those test results. Do they make them public? Are they on your website? But that way you can see that they really do test. We should be, pet owners should have access to that kind of information.
Absolutely.
And see how willing they are to share that information with the pet owner.
Yeah, because if they are proud of what they do and they do put the health and wellness of pets at the forefront of their business, then they will be more than willing to share that information with them, because they'll probably like a badge, won't they? They'll be like, no, we do that. We do go to these excessive levels, even though there should just be the standards anyway, but because of what we're used to, they're sort of like seen as going above and beyond. It can be catastrophic, and part of the problem as well is that they tend to ship the pet food out and then only recall it when it kind of causes so much of a problem, isn't it? I think that tends to be the case.
When it could have been prevented.
When it could have been
prevented. Yeah, and it could have been prevented with proper testing. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. It's a sad situation, really, isn't it? When you think about how many pets have been hurt or we've lost to this kind of behavior from the people that we trust.
And it's a major expense. Testing is not cheap. So a small company who is trying to produce a high quality food, that expense of testing is a major thing to them.
Yeah.
However, it's just as important for this little company as it is a big company. So it's something that my joke is, if they can't do it right, go make flip-flops. You know, don't make pet food. You've got to do all of this right, because our pets' lives are depending on this.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though obviously that you've got the raw and natural food kind of movement happening at the moment, where more and more pet parents are taking control of the diet and feeding natural foods and moving away from the processed foods, although that's kind of like exciting and it's growing all the time, the majority of populations globally, not just kind of like in the USA or in the UK, still feed the processed diets, don't they? And, you know, they're recommended in all of the veterinary clinics. Well, not all of them, but a lot of the veterinary clinics. And they're just kind of like what is in front of everybody everywhere. So it is still, you know, you'd like to think that after all this time that standards were improving there as well. But it just seems to be that they're taking a while to catch up, aren't they, I think?
Yeah. Well, it's we're gaining on it. You know, the education of pet owners through podcasts like this, through my website, it is reaching more and more pet owners, and it's all starting to sink in. You know, you think, well, I'm not supposed to eat a lot of processed food, so why am I giving solely processed food to my pet? You know, then you start to make that connection. Ah, this makes sense. So minimally processed is a good thing for our pets.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us as well, which more and more people are becoming aware of as well in recent years. So in 2013, you founded the Association for Truth in Pet Food. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
For me to have a voice at AFCO, to be recognized as a consumer representative, they insisted that I form an organization. They would not let Susan of truthaboutpetfood.com be a voice. You were a blogger, and we don't listen to bloggers. So I had to start our consumer association, which is a stakeholder organization of pet food that represents consumers. And it turned out being a good thing that I was pushed into that, because we are a separate organization. I have a voice with FDA through that organization, with AFCO through that organization. So we are recognized as an official stakeholder of pet food, just like the industry stakeholder groups.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I think it definitely is a positive, isn't it? Because now you actually can be that voice that you were doing anyway. But like you say, they've given you kind of like this bit of oomph behind it, if you want to call it. So people can support that as well, can't they? They can make donations through the website to support the work that you're doing.
Yeah, it's $10 a year, you know, to become a member of the association. The website you know, everything that I publish is mainly on truth about pet food, not the association website. The website is there just as a placeholder, basically. But the association is constantly active through any kind of advocating that we do.
Yeah, and you are constantly always publishing new articles and everything on Truth About Pet Food website as well, aren't you? So it's not something that you've just kind of posted on once and then let people read. You are still actively doing the research, putting on the articles, going to the meetings and just kind of building your case against the harm, the hidden harms of pet food, aren't you? So it's still very active even to this day after all this time. Yeah.
Well, right now, the day before Christmas, there was a raw pet food that recalled, saying the food had the potential to be contaminated with the avian flu. I don't know if you all have much of that in England right now, but it's a huge concern in the U.S. And there were a lot of questions about this. The product was tested positive was an open product. It was from the pet owner. A cat did die. But the only positive test they got was an open product. And so it could have been contaminated in another way. So we started dealing with the regulatory authority right away, asking questions, and it took them way too long to finally respond to our questions. But they brought up law. They, you know, because you regulations as they are, you have to test an unopened, a sealed product in order to really get accurate results.
Yeah.
And this regulatory authority did not get a positive result on that, and they misled the public. They didn't tell the public that their testing was on an open product. They misled on several different things. Well, then they quoted law to me in their responses, and that law, their own state law, is these rendered ingredients that we discussed earlier. All of those rendered ingredients violate the same law. They are saying that they had authority to recall this raw pet food on. So now I'm trying to get a meeting with them to discuss that you can't hold one style of pet food to the law while letting other styles of pet food violate the very same law. So that's what we're doing now. So we are constantly advocating, you know, that consumers deserve consistent, uniform enforcement of law. Our pets depend on that. So that's what we're battling right now.
Yeah, and I think I imagine that the processed pet food companies don't particularly like the raw and fresh pet food companies very much, do they? Because they're starting to...
Because they're growing. It is the fastest, you know, minimally processed pet food is the fastest growing category in pet food.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely understandable as well, because it's hard to ignore just how unhealthy pets have become over the past 30 years, especially with all the changes that we've seen in the way that we live and the foods that we feed. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me, but definitely a few more battles to be won, I think, until we're actually quite there, isn't there, Susan?
Okay. Well, we are gaining on. You know, awareness, consumer awareness is a huge part of it. So the more people that are informed, the more changes we can make.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think I've just got one more question. So if you had just one piece of advice to give to pet parents today regarding the safety of pet food, what would it be?
Give your pet food, not feed. New feed.
Yeah.
That is so important to me. I won't, like, if when I walk my dogs and somebody might be out and they have treats because they like to give them to neighborhood dogs, I won't let my pets eat anything.
Yeah,
that I don't know what it is. It is just that important. So do your homework. Learn if it's food or if it's feed. You want food, and only give them food. And if the cost of food is a lot more, and if you can't afford it every day, do some days or do half, you know, one meal food and the other meal feed, but or a tablespoon of food, home prepared food. As long as you follow good recipes so that you make sure you are providing proper amount of calories, all the required nutrients, that's a great way to save money. We make our own pet food as well as buy commercial. My pets, I have 2 dogs and 5 cats, and they eat part commercial and part home prepared. So part raw, part cooked, and the home prepared is cooked. So it's worth the effort.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I agree. Just being aware of some of the problems. Like I say, I don't know if the problem, if the pet food in the UK is parallel to what's happening in the USA. I'd like to think not, because of the standards that we do set here. But, you know, I wouldn't say anything is impossible. And research, empower yourself to make the informed choices that your pet needs, especially if you feed the same food every day. Well, thank you so much, Susan, for joining me on the show. It's been wonderful to have you. What I will do is I'll include all the links in the show notes to Truth About Pet Food and to the Association for Truth in Pet Food, so that people can find and support you, maybe purchase the list if they're interested to find out who's on it. And hopefully we can spread a little bit more awareness about the fantastic work that you've been doing.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favorite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts, and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products, or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian, and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.